This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. You've more than likely heard of and might even have played the new virtual reality app that's been all the rage for players of various ages. For many young adults who grew up with Pokemon cards and video games, there's a nostalgic appeal to the new Pokemon Go. And many have praised the game for getting people outdoors and together with friends, helping to fight mental illness. Here to talk about Pokemon Go and how interactive apps are having an effect on users is Adjunct Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of Cincinnati, Dr. Jim Eliason. And you can join our conversation about Pokemon Go, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jim, good afternoon, and thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
Yeah, have you played the game yet?
I've played a little bit, mostly a little bit because my kids stole my phone to go off and use it to catch Pokemon.
You know, for those of us who might not be familiar with the game, can you describe what's going on, what people are trying to accomplish with this?
Yeah, so it's very similar in some ways to the old card game. You have characters that are out in the world, and you use a navigational map to go out and find these characters in the real world, and you capture them. So it's very much kind of like a scavenger hunt type of game. And it's got an augmented reality component where the map actually has markers that might lead you to a character or lead you to other people playing the game, places like Pokestops and gyms and things like that. And you're trying to go to these places to capture new characters that you might not have, or to meet up with other people, or to battle them.
On Twitter, Jim, there have been stories about Pokemon Go having an impact on players who have anxiety and depression. And I don't think Pokemon Go was intentionally designed to be a tool for treating anxiety and depression. So what's going on here? Why is the game having this kind of an impact, do you think?
Well, one of the basic features is that it promotes social interactions with people. You have to navigate out into the world. I've literally seen people walking through my neighborhood, adults and children, and sometimes in groups of adults and children going out and trying to capture Pokemon, maybe just walking down the block a little ways. Or even in their yard. And so it sort of forces people into the real world to, capture these characters and to, gain achievements and leveling up this process, forces people to go and interact outside of their normal area of comfort.
So there's that social component. Do you think there might be a social downside, though, that people become too engrossed in this or too distracted with it?
Well, as with any video game, you can have that sort of an addictive process, if you will. And if you can't disengage from the game, or if it starts causing problems with your normal activities of daily living, there could be a downside to that. Yeah.
It does sound, though, Jim, like you're talking about people getting out and walking and being outside. Now, hasn't exercise always been touted as a way to help a person deal with anxiety and depression? And is that part of what's going on with this game?
Yeah, and that could be one of the factors. You go out, you activate your whole brain. I mean, the brain's involved in the decision making on where to go and who to engage with and what landmarks to see and the navigational systems and the hippocampus and the parietal lobes and the motor systems for actually moving your body, interacting with your phone, and you have visual recognition for the characters and the locations, identifying those, and have auditory and touch because you have to keep track of what the phone is telling you. And so activating the whole brain and getting the whole system to work together generally can have beneficial effects to brain function in general.
Maybe the game hasn't been out long enough. You're talking about brain function, but maybe we don't know much about this aspect. But do we have any idea if it actually affects brain chemistry? Is this raising dopamine levels or anything like that?
There's certainly a relationship to the basic process of the brain's reward circuitry. So you have these characters that you have to go out and capture, and so the process of capturing these characters leads to achievement in the game or leveling up. And so you go out, you you find one of these characters, you might have to work a little bit to capture it, and then you capture it, and that gives you points or prowess, and you activate the reward system. And so you have this reinforcement learning process where you see a cue in the environment, you act on that cue, and a positive outcome happens, and then you reinforce that process. And so you're going to get sort of natural levels of reward activating during these kinds of activities.
Could this be a substitute for professional treatment of anxiety and depression?
I suspect not. I suspect it could be an augmentation to that, particularly if people are interested in that, and it seems to help them move past like a phobia of being in large open spaces. That, you know, if they're willing to play the game and go out and do that, that has the opportunity to at least assist with a normal treatment process.
Yeah, is there a risk though, Jim, that some people will treat it as a substitute? Say, this really is making me feel better, so I'm not going to seek out help.
I suppose it's possible. I think that for the most part, people would recognize that this is not itself a treatment. This is a game, and while it's good to utilize things to help you treat yourself, it's also good to seek professional help in that regard. And so there comes a point when you as the player or the self-medicating patient may not know what to do next. And so you come to a point where you need guidance in the process of treatment.
You were talking earlier about addiction. What might be some signs that you're addicted to the game?
Well, addiction in general is one of the hallmarks is that the process starts to interfere with normal activities, perhaps going to bed on time or getting up and getting up in the morning and doing that first thing in the morning, and you're unable to engage in what would be typically normal behaviors for you. Those are signs that you're having trouble releasing yourself from the process and perhaps are getting into a situation where you need to have a parent tell you to stop playing, or you need to realize that these are circumstances that are sort of going beyond the normal routine for you. And if that starts to happen, that's when you really have to watch out for the downside effects.
We will continue our conversation about Pokemon Go, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. I'm a guest this afternoon as we talk about Pokemon Go and the effect interactive apps are having on us. Adjunct Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of Cincinnati, Dr. Jim Eliason. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jim, some of the critics of Pokemon Go say it's creating a culture of distraction, and the concern is that how the game suspends people's ability to be in real physical space, which can affect their behavior. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's sort of an acute form of that, right? Which is you're not, as you may be navigating around the environment looking for these characters, you may do things like I heard two people walked off a cliff somewhere. And I'm sure there's the opportunities to sort of disengage from your surroundings and pay attention to what's on your phone. And so that can be a problem, obviously, particularly if you're near roads. But the larger distraction is sort of in general could be a problem, in perhaps larger groups of people. I've heard people talk about how, they need to crack down on people doing Pokemon Go at work. See how that might be a problem for organizations to deal with at some point.
We got an email from Jim, and he said the game has helped him connect with his kids. And I think that's been your experience, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, so we have a box of some 700 Pokemon cards that we inherited from a friend. And this has allowed our kids to sort of get, you know, develop some expertise on Pokemon, and now they want to go out and navigate around in the real world and look for these things, and so they're asking if they can, you know, can we go out for a walk now? And they never usually want to do that after dinner. Or my daughter, who went for a drive the other morning with a friend who's not a Pokemon person at all and captured some Pokemon out on the drive also. And so it's sort of, it's interesting that it allows people to connect at a social level. And that's part of the process of the game as it's portrayed on the Pokemon cartoons that you'll see sometimes.
Do you think this has helped you bond with your kids, Jim?
Oh, I think a little bit. Yeah, certainly. It's kind of funny to see them wanting to charge out of the house and go down the street and capture some rare Pokemon because it's nearby and they've detected that it's nearby. So it's kind of fun to watch them do that. I've gone on a couple of hunts with them as well. So it certainly gives you an opportunity to get. Interact with kids more.
Has mom gotten involved too?
Sure. Her phone has disappeared as well from time to time. So
now, it's what about emotional involvement? Can people become too emotionally attached to something like this?
Well, I think in general that's true of video games. Not just Pokemon, but other games as well, where you become very, very heavily invested in your rank in the game and how to improve it and what to do. And so you can become over-involved. And, you know, people sometimes get mad at video games and throw the keyboard and those kinds of things. And over the long term, you know, that kind of behavior can perhaps lead to something more significant if you let it sort of persist. And so you have to, you know, watch out for that to some degree, I suppose.
And again, it goes back to what you were saying earlier. The degree to which it interferes with your life is going to give you an idea if you're having trouble with this or not.
Yeah, that's the general. That's a sort of a general feature of addiction is one of the ways in which psychiatrists will diagnose it is how much it interferes with normal activities of daily living.
What about as far as the parental role in this? Should parents be setting rules on playing this game? I mean, that's pretty much what you do with a lot of games anyhow.
I think probably you have to set some ground rules. I had a friend who said, oh, yeah, my kids are out till 3 a.m. playing Pokemon Go. And his kids are, I don't know, I think maybe they're a year older than, my older son, so they're probably 15 years old. And so you think, okay, well, is that the kind of thing that's appropriate? Is it okay with you, the parent? And so you have to, you know, everybody's going to have a different set of ground rules that they want to use, but probably you do have to set some sort of rules on where and when.
Jim, are there other apps and games that you've noticed that have this kind of effect on a person's well-being and mental well-being?
Let's see, what other kinds of games? Well, there's a lot of people have used not necessarily in psychiatric conditions, but in neurological dysfunction like strokes and sort of things. They have rehabilitative programs that have been built into video games. So there's a joke that, you know, you've heard of the Nintendo Wii. You use that for WeHab.
Okay.
So that can help people interact in a way that they couldn't necessarily do. With physically, perhaps the objects are too heavy or the kind of cognitive process that you want them to engage in isn't readily accessible. And so you can use a video game console to bring opportunities to people that aren't normally available to them.
So what do you think as far as the apps, Pokemon Go, the different things that are out there, what's the bottom line on all these things, Jim? What do you think?
Oh, I think they're great. I mean, anytime you can get a game where you have people engaging with one another at a friendly level outside of the standard video game model where it's sort of you alone in a room, you know, this has a couple of features that are very good. One is that there's a huge social component, so people are working together with one another, perhaps, and they're also out in the world. But they're, you know, it's not necessarily a violent kind of video game as well. It's more strategy and activity than it is, the kind of perhaps violent games that you'll see out there that are as alternatives. And so it's got a couple of nice features in that regard.
So I guess, is the old saying, everything in moderation, is that a piece of advice you would give for this?
Yeah, I think that's certainly true here. It's good because it engages you, sort of the whole person, the whole body, and that's one of the features that I like about it, is that you're out there. You know, perhaps somebody reported that they played only a moderate amount and had walked 15 kilometers in 2 days to catch 87 characters, which I didn't think was very moderate at all. So,
any other advice, Jim?
I think you hit it on the head. Moderation is good, and you want to just have fun with it and don't overdo it.
After all, it's just a game, right?
Exactly.
Jim, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Adjunct Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of Cincinnati, Dr. James Eliason. Coming up, we'll hear about the most common summertime injuries for kids and how to prevent them. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.